Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go. It is a Wednesday. We are live in Los Angeles. It's the Herd, wherever you may be. And however you may be listening, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. It is a pleasure to have you in today. It's Jersey Mike Subs today. The Herd brought to you by those guys. Be a sub above, Jersey Mike Subs. You know, Joy Taylor is joining me. We got Joel Klatt's going to yell at me today. Bill Burr, the comedian, Nick Wright. Very, very lively show today. Have you ever had, Joy, anything that you because so many smart people were doing something that it influenced you to do something that you may have had your doubts on something and you don't believe it to be true. And then you look around and you're like, all these smart people are doing it. Maybe I should invest in that.
Yes.
So that's how I feel about Uber.
Yeah.
And I want to start the show with that. So I was a real cynic of Uber. Getting into strangers' cars, I wouldn't want my daughter in a stranger's car. And I remember talking to an investor in San Francisco. He didn't like Uber either. He goes, it seems dangerous. But so many smart people in my life have told me, that's one of the great, it's changed transportation. It's one of the great investments ever. And a story came out a couple days ago, Uber Eats, because of the pandemic, is exploding. That it's this company, it can not only take you and I around, it can take food around. And now it can take cannabis around. They're going to move into cannabis. And so I was always like, I don't know if I'd invest in Uber. But so many smart people I knew kept telling me, no, buy stock. This is brilliant. It's going to change transportation. And it has. It's literally, it used to be in America, the simplest money was dry cleaners and parking garages. It ended parking garages. Who needs to take a car downtown? Take Uber. It's changed the restaurant industry. When I lived in Manhattan Beach, restaurants are exploding. Why? Because people from the other side of town can take an Uber and have a second bottle of wine. They don't have to drive home. It's helped the restaurant industry. And I was thinking about this with Mac Jones of the 49ers. I saw a story this morning. Another story. Kyle Shanahan, John Lynch are going to take Mac Jones. And I'm like, this is my Uber. I can't get my arms around it. I don't understand it. He's the least athletic quarterback. And then I thought to myself, what it really tells you, it tells you how much confidence Kyle Shanahan has in his offense. Kyle Shanahan saying, I don't want the best athlete because the best athlete's going to run around and the best athlete's going to freelance and the best athlete's going to, like any great athlete, want to show his skills. If you could sing, you'd sing all day in the car in the shower. I don't want guys running out of my offense. And what Kyle Shanahan lost with Garoppolo, he lost trust. He lost trust in Jimmy G's health and his judgment. And he looks at Mac Jones and he goes, I'll trust him. He's not going to freelance out of plays. He's not going to ad-lib out of plays. And I keep looking at this like I don't understand it. But remember, Matt LaFleur and Kyle Shanahan run the same offense. So when LaFleur got to Green Bay, LaFleur told Aaron, stop ad-libbing. Stop freelancing. Here's the play. Make the easy throw. And Aaron just had his best year in a decade. And Matt LaFleur and Kyle run the exact same offense. And I look at Mac Jones and I'm like, he's my Uber. I don't get it. He's got a low ceiling. But if you trust your system, athletic quarterbacks are going to do what athletes would do. They're going to use their full range of skills. And there's been a lot of Super Bowls won in the last 15 years by Eli Manning and Peyton Manning and Drew Brees and Tom Brady and Phillip Rivers last year. Phillip Rivers won 12 games from the pocket. And Tom Brady ended up winning 15 games from the pocket if you count the Super Bowl. And Brees won 9. And Jared Goff, who's really unathletic, won 9. And it's an interesting stat out there. Do you know what quarterback has the most passing yards in the history of the NFL through his first 16 games? Patrick Mahomes. Do you know who's second? Nick Mullins. Kyle Shanahan trusts his system. He doesn't want an athlete to screw it up. He just doesn't want an athlete to screw it up because an athlete's going to do what an athlete's going to do. He's going to run around because he can. I mean, Lamar Jackson hasn't developed the passing game quite yet. Why? Why would he? High school, college, NFL, runs around, wins 85% of his games. Now, eventually, you get hit a few times. Michael Vick said this. You get hit a few times. Steve Young walked into the NFL. He ran around. Then he got pegged in the ribs. And then Steve Young became a really good pocket passer. Russell Wilson ran around, got hit a few times. Then he becomes a better pocket passer. So I'm trying to get my arms around Mac Jones, and I get that stat. Nick Mullins, number two, NFL history, first 16 games. Kyle said, my system's good. Matt LaFleur told Aaron Rodgers, stop ad-libbing. Stop running around. Just stay in the pocket. I'll create the read. You hit it. Be smart. Audible out. The more you run, the more the system fails. He wants a guy he can trust. By the way, this is why Kyle Shanahan, according to the story, loves Kirk Cousins. Kurt's not athletic enough to ad-lib. He'll just stay there and win games. And most of us look at Kirk Cousins and think, you can win 9-10 games. And Kyle looks at him and says, no, I can win 12-13-14 games with Kirk because I trust my system. So we all fall into a habit. I do too. I try not to, but we all do. Is that we fall in love with offense. And let's be honest, it's more fun to watch. Would you rather watch Steph Curry or Ben Wallace? I mean, seriously. I mean, who would you watch? Damian Lillard, Steph Curry, or for a lot of you, Ben Simmons, who's a great defensive guard. Ben Simmons is an all-time great defensive guard. But we'd rather watch Steph and Dame. I mean, Chris Paul can't even get in the top five in the MVP voting. We'd rather watch Devin Booker, and Chris Paul's the much more valuable player. So Ben Simmons was talking about, you know, everybody said, oh, now Philadelphia is the number one defensive team in the East. And everybody's talking about, oh, Brooklyn, KD and Harden and Kyrie. Hey, good luck with those guys. Ben Simmons said this.
Huge rivalry. I mean, if they keep that same team, definitely. But, you know, it's going to be hard to do that. But, we're going for the past champs, the Lakers. You know, they were the ones who won the championship, so you got to give the respect to them. Obviously, Brooklyn, you know, has a lot of talent. But at the end of the day, you know, there's only one ball. You got to play defense, too. So, you know, we gotta come and prepare mentally and physically.
He's not taking a shot at Brooklyn. They're terrible defensively. Ask yourself, when is the last terrible defensive team in the NBA that won a championship? I'll wait. You will not find it. My suspicion this morning was the Dallas Mavericks. Remember the Dirk Nowitzki team? No, they were top 10. Golden State, all they did was shoot. No, Draymond and Klay Thompson are all-time great defensive stoppers. In the last 50 years, okay, this is a pretty big sample size, 5 decades, there has been one team to win an NBA title. And not even a terrible defensive team that was in the bottom half in defense. Just the bottom half. It was the Lakers. 2001, they were 19th. So I went and inspected that one this morning. That Laker team, Kobe and Shaq, was actually number one in the NBA the year before with defense. And they crushed everybody. So the following year, they came into the season, and Shaq and Kobe were going to let somebody else play a little defense in the regular season. And then the playoffs started, and they were the number one defensive team in the NBA in the playoffs. That team was a great defensive team when they felt like it. Okay, this defense, Brooklyn, is bad. KD is the best of their big three. Blake Griffin doesn't play it. LaMarcus Aldridge doesn't play it. Harden doesn't play it. Kyrie doesn't play it. KD does, and he really puts an effort forward, but he's kind of brittle. And the truth is, do you want KD playing 42 minutes of world-class defense? In the last 25 years, nobody's been out of the top 10 defensively that's won a title, except that Laker team. And they come with a total caveat. They were actually a great defensive team, but they were so dominant, they mailed in the regular season. Once the playoffs started, Only three teams scored over 100 points on that 2001 Kobe Shaq team. We do this all the time. We had the Kansas City Chiefs winning 9 Super Bowls. They've been in 2. They were routed in 1 and trailed the other one in the 4th. And the one they won against San Francisco, it was because in week 11 of that year, they became a top 10 defense. You look at the history of great offenses in the NFL and the NBA, and we'll just stick to NBA. Nobody wins with a bad defense. Nobody. And Brooklyn is awful. I mean, we just all know. Kyrie, Harden are awful. Blake Griffin, awful. LaMarcus Aldridge, not great. And add this. Steve Nash didn't play defense as a player. And Mike D'Antoni, maybe the worst defensive coach that's made the playoffs historically over and over and over. So before we hand it to them, they're going to have to go through Philadelphia, the number one defensive team in the East, and the Lakers, by the way, who were the number one NBA team defensively in the bubble last year, and I think were number one this year when LeBron and AD were healthy.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
There's something called the illusion of interest. When you go to buy a home, you don't want to think the sellers that you're desperate. You want them to always think. I've throughout the course of my life, I've moved enough. I've had a few homes, just bought another one. You don't walk into the house and say, oh, my God, I'm in love. Every time I walk into a house with my wife, I'm like, feign interest. It's okay. It's a nice house. It's a lot of nice houses. You don't want to feel desperate. It's the illusion, right, that I have other things I'm interested in. And the Atlanta Falcons are playing. They're very, very smart here. So the Atlanta Falcons have the number 4 pick. They don't need a quarterback. They don't need a quarterback. They need a lot of stuff. They don't need a quarterback. But you see what the Falcons are doing? Joy, they're sending 3 more people to the Justin Fields Pro Day. So they already sent their head coach, their GM, and their offensive coordinator to watch Justin Fields. And now they're sending their quarterback coach, their wide receiver coach, their director of college scout. Go, very interested in this pick. They want to trade that number 4 pick. But they want to create the illusion of interest. So I was talking to super agent Drew Rosenhaus last night. He talked about this. Years ago, he had a player he was representing named Willis McGahee. Great running back. Oh, and he got hurt in the bowl game. Ripped his knee up. And so Drew Rosenhaus represented him, and he's sitting there waiting to be drafted, and nobody's drafting him. And every time ESPN takes a shot at McGahee, he's sitting there by himself. So Drew Rosenhaus calls him on his phone, and he says, I'm going to make it feel like he's on the phone with a team. McGahee picks up his phone. He's talking. And NFL teams, when they pan back to Willis McGahee, well, who's he talking to? Whoa. We like Willis McGahee. We were going to wait to the 3rd round. We got to move it to the 2nd round. And he got drafted by, I think, Buffalo. And Drew Rosenhaus, suddenly, all of a sudden, his phone lit up. Who's McGahee talking to? What team's he talking? Who's going to draft him? Well, Drew's like, I don't know. He's very interested. It was Drew calling his client to create the illusion of interest. And so Atlanta, this is very smart. I'm going to send a caravan for Justin Fields. Now New England. Now Denver. Now Chicago. Maybe Washington. Oh, crap. We can't go move up to 5. We got to move up to 4. By the way, this is how Carolina, the second thing to this is very smart, is when you send a lot of people to these pro days and there's 4 or 5 other teams there that need a quarterback, you communicate with them. This is what Carolina did with the Jets. So Carolina sent their GM to a pro day and the Niners were there and the Jets were there and their GM talked to Joe Douglas. And we later found out that's how the Sam Darnold deal happened. Jets to Carolina. They meet at a pro day. They start texting and talking. This is why everybody loved the combine. They hold it in Indianapolis every year. And it's known as like a 4-day party for executives. They go out drinking together. They have dinners together. They talk together. You just want to be in the rooms. That's where all this stuff starts. That's where all this stuff starts. These conversations at pro days. And so Sam Darnold ended up in Carolina because the GM of Carolina and Joe Douglas and the Niners people, they're all sitting around there watching Justin Fields, and they're talking, they're texting pretty soon, 2-3 days later, they make the deal. So, by the way, the Falcons yesterday, and they're really playing it up, it's really smart. The Falcons' Twitter account yesterday put out a video of their general manager's interest in quarterbacks. His quote was, "We love stacking quarterbacks here in Atlanta." It's funny, you've never done it before. Suddenly you have a great keen interest in stacking quarterbacks. The illusion of interest. Drew Rosenhaus on the phone with Willis McGahee. Freaked everybody out. Who's he on the phone with? Oh my God. They're going to take Willis McGahee. He was going to drop and drop and drop. And say, somebody rushes up. Don't kid yourself. A lot of this stuff is gamesmanship in the NFL draft. A lot of it is gamesmanship.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Nick Wright, co-host, First Things First, my buddy. Okay, so I already know your disdain for New England. That even though Edelman is second all time in playoff catches and yards, that you have already, I mean, you won't even let him get on a bus to Canton and watch the ceremony. You know, and I've always said a true friend, there's friends that want to go with you to Vegas for a weekend. True friends are at you at the hospital. You get divorced. Edelman's a true receiver. He's great when it matters most. No junk yards. No nonsense with 7 minutes to go in Atlanta getting all these freebie yards. You're trailing late. True yards, my friend. What do you make of that?
Yeah, and that gets you a deserved spot in the Patriots Ring of Honor, not the Pro Football Hall of Fame. I listened to you yesterday, and I was just watching mouth agape as you really tried to make the case. Julian Edelman, Calvin Johnson. I don't know. Like, I mean, you know, birds of a different feather. What? Colin, at no point in his career was Julian Edelman a top five receiver. I would argue at no point was he a top 10 receiver. Did he have great moments? Absolutely. Did he get the most out of his ability? Sure. But the Hall of Fame, can we put up the blind reveal, please? Because if we're letting Julian into the Hall of Fame, would you at least agree, before I reveal these people, that all those numbers are about equivalent?
Yeah.
That those are about, statistically speaking, about the same. Okay, show me those four Hall of Famers. It's Julian Edelman, Deion Branch, who also has a Super Bowl MVP, Wayne Krabet, and Santonio Holmes, who also has a Super Bowl MVP, maybe the greatest catch in Super Bowl history. We letting them in? And by the way, if we just want regular season stats, Pierre Garçon is like, hey, I've got more touchdowns than Edelman. What about my trophy? Colin, we can't do it. We got to stop.
You know what?
Please.
This is the difference. See, as a New England Patriot fan, I don't even consider the regular season barely worth watching. I am so accustomed to starting watching football Christmas on. I have it so.
Okay. But then let me ask you this real quick. Let me just stay here. Right. Is Derek Fisher a Hall of Famer?
No. But NBA's different.
What? Five rings.
I know.
He won three with the Lakers. He left. They never won. He came back. They won.
Yeah.
He hit that great shot, .4 left against San Antonio. Yeah. Help him get to a finals. That's Edelman's catch against Atlanta. You're right. He's not a Hall of Famer. He's a key role player, like Edelman. Enough. Now, Edelman, by the way, he is in the Hall of Fame of people who have tweeted me at 3 in the morning, possibly slightly intoxicated. He is in the Hall of Fame of that group. That's a small group.
I think KD's in that group, too. So I want to talk about this. We fall in love with offense. But what really won for Kansas City wasn't just Mahomes and Andy Reid, their Super Bowl. It was that about a week 11, they got really good. Their defense got really good.
Yep.
And it's impossible to find a bad team defensively that wins Super Bowls. I mean, Brady in the Super Bowl, fine. The defense won the Super Bowl. It was the Bucs defense. You can't, but we think in the That's NBA right. is different. NBA is about scores. You cannot find a bad defense in 50 years. And the Brooklyn Nets are terrible defensively. I don't think they're a championship club. Your thoughts?
This has been, I have been beating this drum from the beginning of the year. Before the Harden trade, I said, who's going to get stops? When they were talking about trading for Harden, I said, how does that help your weakness? once they got Harden in. They've looked great. The defense has not improved. 25th in the league, and you are absolutely right. The rule isn't that you can't be a bad defense. It's actually more restrictive than that. The rule has been you must be a good defense. You must be a top 11 defense historically to win the title, with the one exception being an 0-1 Lakers team that had Shaquille O'Neal at his apex prime dominance, who mailed in the whole regular season. That's the only exception. Prior to this year, do you know the highest scoring team on a per possession basis in the history of the NBA was last year's Mavericks, and they went out in round one because they couldn't get stops. Doug Moe's Nuggets couldn't get stops. Steve Nash's Suns couldn't get stops. And this idea of, oh, well, you haven't seen the Nets' full strength. None of that's going to help them get stops. And they have one guy in their starting five who is, when fully healthy, a very good defender. It's Durant. But you can't, are you really going to say to Durant, listen, be our third option offensively because we need you to shut down the opposing team's best player? And what hurts them in that regard as well is they're not trying to go through small great players. They're trying to go through Giannis, then Embiid, and then Andre Drummond, who they can't beat. And if Drummond has an off night, that team does happen to have LeBron James and Anthony Davis. I do not think they make the finals, and if they get there, I do not think they can beat the Lakers. So you and I are in lockstep on this. They have to get better defensively, and they don't. Some last thing on this, some people are like, oh, well, that's an effort issue. For some teams,
yeah.
But for some teams, it's a personnel issue,
yes.
And they do not have the personnel to get better defensively.
Yeah, as you and I have discussed, Andre Drummond has owned Brooklyn, even when he was with Detroit. Andre Drummond.
The Cavs, yeah.
Yeah, exactly right. Cavs.
Yep. 3-0 this year.
Yeah.
3-0 this year. Owned them. It's unbelievable.
So let's circle back to the NFL. So I said this. I never understood Uber as a company. I didn't understand the idea of putting my daughter in a stranger's car. I thought, I can't invest in this.
That's right.
But for years and years, people kept telling me, no, it's going to change transportation. And now you see Uber Eats is it's the hottest company in America. And now Uber's like, yeah, we'll deliver cannabis so they can feed me and get me stoned. I mean, this company's going to the moon. But the thing is, the reason for years and years I kind of bought into it, because all my smart friends were like, no, this is going to work. And I'm like, okay, I give up. So we know Kyle Shanahan's smart. We know that. The Mac Jones thing. I just don't get it. And then I'm thinking to myself, the most passing yards through the first 16 games in their career, Mahomes is one, Nick Mullins is two. And Shanahan's saying, I don't want an athlete. It's insane. And he's saying to himself, I know my system. I like Kirk Cousins. I don't want you, Justin Fields, to run out. So I think to myself, Kyle Shanahan's too smart to not know something about Mac Jones, right?
So, all right. So there's a lot to unpack here. First of all, because you're my dear friend, Uncle Colin, while I'm glad you're not saying reefer, maybe just say weed or marijuana instead of cannabis.
Okay.
I feel like people are like, cannabis? What? Okay, just for the hipper audience. That's first point. Second point is, the Uber analogy is a great one, but sometimes it's Uber, and sometimes it's Juicero or Theranos. And it's like, this juice thing's it's worth $6 billion. No, it was actually worth nothing, and it was a terrible investment. I think Mac Jones is more likely to be Juicero than he is to be Uber. And I do trust Kyle Shanahan, and I do understand the point, which is Kyle Shanahan, our friend Bomani Jones made this point, and I think he put it right. Kyle Shanahan might very well believe, you know who the key to my system is? Me. Like, I'm the star of this movie. I just need someone who's going to play his role. That I think that's right. But if that's the case, then why are you trading 3 first-round picks for a quarterback? Like, if you don't think you need a difference maker, Mac Jones at 12 to San Francisco, if they had stood pat, to me makes a lot of sense. The fact that they traded 3 first-round picks to get a specific guy tells me that maybe he thinks, yes, my offense can work. I can get to a Super Bowl, mostly on defense, by the way, with a Jimmy Garoppolo, but I can thrive. I can have a, and it was, you know, a one-year type of situation, but RG3 type of success his rookie season if I have the right type of guy. I know all the people who are talking to GMs think it's Mac Jones. I can't wrap my arms around it yet. So maybe, listen, maybe this will be my, for your Uber, my Bitcoin. I keep waiting for that sucker to go down. It's, I think it's 62,000 a coin now. So like maybe I've just missed the boat on it, but I feel like if Justin Fields is there, you've got to take him.
Yeah, no, I like Justin Fields too. All right, that's enough. That was 10 great minutes of Nick Wright. Oh. Everything else good in your life?
Okay.
Anything else?
Yeah, oh, that's very nice of you for asking. Thank you. Yesterday was my anniversary with my wife and I. We had a wonderful time. It's good to talk to you as always. And so thank you. That was very kind.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Great game tonight. Sixers-Nets should be fun. I'd bet the Sixers, America. That's my free advice to you guys on the way out the door.
All right, buddy. Good seeing you, Nick Wright.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Hey, it's me, Rob Parker. Check out my weekly MLB podcast, Inside the Parker, for 22 minutes of piping hot baseball talk featuring the biggest names and newsmakers in the sport. Whether you believe in analytics or the eye test, we've got all the bases covered. New episodes drop every Thursday, so do yourself a favor and listen to Inside the Parker with Rob Parker on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Joel Klatt's going to come on now. The draft is a couple weeks out. He's our draft analyst, our number one draft analyst. He goes to the draft, and he's all dialed in on this stuff. I got to give Klatt credit, and let's bring him on live. He holds 44, he set 44 school records as the quarterback at Colorado. Now, many of them were most incompletions and pick sixes, but nonetheless, I looked it up. 44 school records. That is it. You know what? I give you a lot of crud. You weren't bad, Klatt. You were pretty good.
You know, it's better to be smart than good. I went to a school that used to run the option. That's how you do it.
That is no kidding. You right. are. There you go. Good call. So I look at these quarterbacks, and I've said this two or three times today. When smart people do things, and I think they're smarter than me, I may not agree, but at some point I think to myself, well, smart people run the world. Kyle Shanahan knows more football, forgets more than I'll ever know, and he's in on Mac Jones. And I thought last night, okay, quit trying to be right. What does he see that you don't? And I thought, there's a stat out there. The most passing yards in the first 16 games of an NFL career for a quarterback. Mahomes is one. Nick Mullins is two. And Shanahan's saying, I don't want an athlete. I don't want a guy freelancing out of my offense. I just need a guy that'll sit back there, pre-snap, all design the play. This is what Matt LaFleur told Aaron Rodgers. Stop freelancing. You're freelancing out of my plays. Run the offense. You'll be great. Aaron Rodgers had his best year in a decade. So I look at Mac Jones and I have all these doubts and I think Shanahan's saying, listen, I'm the star, not the quarterback. Just deliver. I'll get us there. Do you think I'm nuts on that?
I mean, that's how I feel when I come on and talk about college football. I need you to just like get out of the way, right? No, I think that's accurate. And it's one of the reasons, listen, I'm high on Mac Jones. Now, I don't think I would take Mac Jones over a Justin Fields. But, you know, for a guy like Kyle Shanahan, he looks at the success that he's had with quarterbacks in the past, right? Whether it's Matt Schaub, who he had a lot of success with, or a guy like Matt Ryan, who he had a lot of success with. What those guys do well is that they're anticipatory throwers. They throw with great touch down the field, and they understand defensive structures. They can play from under center. They can play from shotgun. They're good in play action pass. They're good in drop back pass. You know, they can manipulate the defense underneath. They can throw the layered ball. So it's a well-rounded quarterback, and it's not necessarily a guy with a skill set that's going to just blow you away, right? Because let's face it now, and it – even with a guy like Mahomes doing what he's doing, or Lamar Jackson doing what he's doing, or some of these other guys with unbelievable skills, it still takes a guy that's going to sit into the pocket and control the game, right? Like, that's what a quarterback does, and to a large extent, that's what Mac Jones did. Now, there are some concerns with Mac Jones. One is, you know, he only played 1 year. He also played with the best players around him. So how does that convert? I've talked a lot with Matt Leinart about this and how that affected him from going to USC to going to the NFL, and how all of a sudden the level of competition was fair and leveled out. And and you don't have, you know, Devontae Smith on the outside, and you don't have Jalen Waddle, and you don't have Najee Harris, you don't have Steve Sarkisian designing the plays for you creatively. So, but to your point, I think Kyle Shanahan could have a lot of success with a guy like Mac Jones. I just think he might be a reach up there where the 49ers are at.
So you do a lot of Big Ten games. I like Justin Field, a little inconsistent. But there's obviously, if San Francisco's taking Mac Jones, there's stuff people see they don't like. Now, I said this, I'm not sure if I said this last week. Yeah, I think it was last week. I said, whereas Alabama dominates their conference, but they still have to face Georgia and Auburn and Florida and LSU, NFL players everywhere. The gap between Ohio State's talent and even a Penn State's pretty darn large. And that, like, Ohio State quarterbacks, boy, you can run those, you know, those underneath routes to Paris Campbell, and they're six. And sometimes stats for Ohio State quarterbacks are a little deceiving, whereas Mac Jones still has to beat LSU's personnel. Is the knock on Fields, maybe we don't know really what he is, because Ohio State's personnel is so much better than everybody else they face?
Well, I mean, I think you could say that about Bama last year, right? And I think that the SEC was a little bit down last year compared to what Alabama was. It's interesting that you bring up this narrative around Ohio State quarterbacks, because it's actually false. And I'd like sit back for a second, because it's statistically inaccurate. Okay, Justin Fields is a far different player than what Dwayne Haskins was. This is the comparison, right? This is what people are starting to say, is like, well, it's the same offense under Ryan Day, and Dwayne Haskins hasn't panned out, and so maybe this Fields stuff is not quite what we think it is, because it's overblown because of Ohio State. But they played far different games. Let me just give you an example. Do you know that Dwayne Haskins, in his year under Ryan Day, he was 41st in the Power Five among quarterbacks in terms of production before yards after the catch? So air yards.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
How many yards, how much of his production was just through the air? He was 41st, okay? It was around 50% of his production. So he was throwing to guys like Terry McLaurin and Paris Campbell, and he was utilizing the speed, and they were killing Don Brown's defense at Michigan State with the crossing routes. And he was very accurate as a tall passer, just getting the ball out almost like a dart thrower. Bang, 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 bang. Okay, now how was that different than Justin Fields? Well, okay, Haskins was 41st in the Power Five. Both seasons that Justin Fields just played at Ohio State, he was the number one quarterback in the Power Five as far as production through the air. Okay, so this guy was much more of a down-the-field passer than was Haskins. It was a totally different offense. 70% 1 year, 71% the other, in terms of his production being through the air rather than after the catch. It's part of the reason why he holds the ball in the pocket. Why? Because they were attacking down the field. When you're running down the field, intermediate and deep read routes, which they did quite often with a guy like Chris Olave, who's a silky smooth wide receiver from the slot, what you have to do is hold the pocket so that you can read the middle read in the intermediate zone. That's very difficult to do for a quarterback. Did you also know that he was one of, if not the most accurate passer when he did throw the football down the field? The narrative about Justin Fields is completely false, folks. All right, the numbers back it up. If you turn on the film, that backs it up. And even this whole narrative that he's inconsistent, totally false. He had one bad game in his college career. It was Indiana. He was forcing the football. He learned from it. Did you know that the next time that they got into some trouble against Northwestern, when they didn't have Olave on the field as a wide receiver, what did he do? He managed the game beautifully. His statistics wouldn't blow you the way, but he was getting them into the right run play to the tune of Trey Sermon's breaking the Ohio State single-game rushing record that Eddie George had held. He ran for over 300 yards. Then he goes out against Clemson and maybe has one of the best performances that we've ever seen. take Justin Fields in the draft. My goodness, this narrative is totally false. And that's why I think any of those teams up there should absolutely look at him with a second look and draft him when they can.
That's pretty good. Yeah, you were worth your money on that one. All right, now I'm going to throw you a real zinger. So I have this thing that whatever you're good in life, you will lean into. You know, if you're a big buff guy, you'll go to the gym and wear a medium T-shirt. If you're a singer, you'll sing in the shower, sing in the car. So Zach Wilson is, quote, great in chaos. Yeah, so is Brett Favre, and he's the all-time leader in picks. Is that if you're good in chaos, you kind of like chaos. You get a little addicted to chaos because you're good at it. And I look at the Jets and I think, well, God, the whole organization's chaos. I don't want more chaos. I look at Zach Wilson and I think, can he play in structure? It's great to be great in chaos against Air Force. Okay, last year BYU schedule, because of the pandemic, was the worst schedule they'd played in years. Usually BYU's plays a good schedule. And I hear all this Zach Wilson chaos stuff and I think, I don't want my quarterback. Maybe that worked in the gunslinger era. 99% of Mahomes' touchdowns are not in chaos. What do you make of that? Zach Wilson's great in chaos.
Part of it is that he relies on his arm a little bit too much. And it's an epic arm, Colin. I got to, like, he makes some throws. When you watch BYU play, and I don't care the level of competition, he makes a few throws every game that just, like, make me – I watch film on my iPad, right? And I just, like, put the iPad down, and I'm like, wow. Like, what would that be like to throw the football like that? That's – His off-platform arm talent is as good as I've seen in a long time. Now, it's not Mahomes, but the dude can absolutely sling it. And to your point about we tend to lean into what we're great at, part of the thing with Zach Wilson is that he knows he can make every single throw.
Right.
So he doesn't take what I would call the bunnies or what the defense gives you right away. See, some quarterbacks understand that they have to take what the defense gives all the time, and then when a big play arises, then they're going to hit the defense. Whereas Wilson thinks that he can create a big play with that arm talent at any moment. That can be problematic in the NFL, and I think he's going to have to learn how not to do that. He also played behind absolutely his best offensive line in his 3 years last year, and when you're talking about the margin between the offensive line and the competition's defensive line, it was dramatic. That offensive line was really good for BYU, so he had a lot of time. He was able to sit there, and because of that, I think he got a false sense of confidence that he could sit around and then utilize that arm to make big-time throws. Now, he's a salty competitor. I think he's a really talented player. There's no doubt about it. And when he did play Power 5 competition in previous years, whether it was USC or Tennessee, you know, he played really well. So even though their schedule wasn't great, I think that you can still say that this guy can rise to the occasion when the playing field is leveled. I certainly think he's an early first-round pick. I wouldn't take him before Justin Fields, but that's only because Fields consistently was a more accurate passer, played in a system that I think translates to the NFL a little bit better and sooner than a Zach Wilson. And Wilson at times can just sit there and rely on his arm. Fabulous player, there's no doubt, but there's some things that are going to have to iron itself out.
By the way, we talk a lot of quarterbacks because you have 44 Colorado records, and we have to acknowledge you are a guru at that. But let's defense for a second. It is a weird draft where at the top of the draft, it's quarterbacks, wide receivers, tight ends, O-linemen. Yes. A couple years ago, it was all defense in the top. Now it's all offense. Who is the best defensive prospect out there?
Yeah, good question. I think Micah Parsons would probably be, you know, your answer from most people, and I certainly would second that. He's a terrific player, right? Great instincts. He can play all over the field. They played more zone coverage than man. It was a heavy zone scheme. So I don't know what he is from a coverage standpoint, because remember, he was more of a defensive end in high school and then moved back. So playing in space, I think, is going to have to iron itself out, but he's very talented. Here's a guy to just keep your eye on, because I think he's a hybrid player that's going to fit. And if somebody has a plan for him, he's going to do really well. That's Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah from Notre Dame.
Yeah.
Right? This guy is a playmaker, and he's going to slip because people are going to be like, well, I don't know where he fits. But if somebody has vision and a plan for Owusu-Koramoah, I think they're going to get a great player.
You know, it's funny you talk about that. I remember having an NBA GM 20 years ago tell me that. He goes, Bob Whitsett told me this. It was the Blazer GM. He said, we're moving into an era of the positionless players in the NBA. You got 6'9 guys can handle the ball. Ben Simmons is a 6'10 point. You're seeing it in the NFL, too. Guy's a great athlete, and you're just moving him all around. Quarterback, best athlete in high school now, now plays quarterback. You're seeing Isaiah Simmons, Clemson. You're seeing this more and more where, okay, we got this kid. I mean, Kyle Pitts, is he a receiver or tight end? If he lost eight pounds,
yeah,
he's a
wide. That's a great point.
Yeah, I mean, I think I do think we're getting to a point now where if a guy's honey badger's always been that for me. All I know is instinctively, he's about the best football player. Instinctively, he's always around the ball.
Yeah, not every single time. This is a gross generalization, but when you take a guy that like fits neatly into a box because of measurables and other types of things that are not just play on the field, they tend to underwhelm on the field versus guys that are just like, hey, my coach used to say this term. We always used to roll our eyes, but like, hey, man, he's just a football playing Jesse, right? Like, Owosu Koramoah is just going to make plays.
Right.
Find a place for him on the football field, and he's going to impact the game positively for your defense.
Yeah, in fact, I had a general manager tell me a month ago, and Greg Cosell echoed this, right tackle, left tackle. Increasingly, can you play tackle? I may move you, you know, if you know, Slater for Northwestern, he can play either tackle or either guard.
Well, and remember now, I think that left tackle used to be a bigger deal when teams were predominantly right-handed, and I'm not talking about just the throwing arm of their quarterback. I'm talking about their run strength. You know, when I first came up in football, it was like you put your best offensive lineman on the right side, and your right side running schemes were better than your left side running schemes. It was just teams were right-handed. So what happened? They generally put their tight end to the right side, and these were inline tight ends. And when you have an inline tight end, even in a passing play, that defensive end doesn't get a clean rush on the right tackle. So that's why it was always more important to have a good pass protector as your left tackle. Well, guess what we don't have anymore? Really any like strength as far as right or left. And we also don't have a ton of inline tight ends. So the right tackle is on an edge just as much as the left tackle is. And to your point, I think it's absolutely accurate. You've got to have two really good pass protecting tackles. And I think that was evident in the Super Bowl when Kansas City just could not keep Patrick Mahomes upright or into the pocket.
I love these opportunities to teach you about the game, Klatt. That's why I bring you on. It means a lot to me to just give you a little edge you didn't have before you showed up.
Oh, you're a beaut. I got to tell you, absolute beaut. 44 school records. That's right.
Yeah, some of them are
very
impressive.
True.
Yeah. All right, Klatt.
There were a couple that are okay. Not all of them.
Good seeing you, buddy.
You too, bud. Have a good one.